Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here Tuesday, January the 26th, 2021, 14 minutes past the hour. And we want to thank Eleanor Clift for coming on in hour number one and discussing a little bit of everything, remembering Larry King, talking about what went on in Washington, has been going on in Washington, and what will go on in Washington over the next few weeks, months, and maybe the year. Hard to say. Now remember, the bottom of this hour, we're going to be joined by a very special guest who has been on this show before for the final 15 minutes, who is going to talk about Larry King. They had worked with Larry King in the last year, and of course legendary broadcaster Larry King passed away Saturday morning at the age of 87, and of course Larry was on this show twice over the years, so we were a fan of Larry King here. That guest will be on in the final 15 of this hour, and it will be interesting to hear their perspective on Larry and other things going on in the world. So we look forward to that in the bottom 15 minutes of this hour. We've got a great week of programming coming up. Thursday is National Kazoo Day, and I have not had a chance to talk about it yet, but Thursday, stay tuned for something special. There's going to be a great program here that morning from 8 until 10 a.m. that has to do with National Kazoo Day in the middle of all this news and the news cycle itself and everything going on. It will be fun just to have a nice easy day on Thursday as we will celebrate National Kazoo Day in a very unique way. So we'll get away from all the heavy stuff on Thursday. So plan on that Thursday morning, 8 to 10 a.m. And also don't forget today, Linda Sims, Voice of the People, 11:10 a.m. The Adam the Computer Guy show at 2:10 p.m. And then another episode of Voice of the People with Linda Sims will air today at 4:10 p.m. So don't miss any of those programs. Joining us for the next 30 minutes here on WWGH Radio is a guest we always love to have on the program. He joins us once a month, the last Tuesday of the month from 9:15 until 9:45, and has been doing this, I think, for close to a year now, and we appreciate it more than he will know. For the first time in 2021, we welcome to these microphones the mayor of the city of Marion, Scott Schertzer. Mayor, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Good morning to you and your listeners. It's good to be with you this year. It's hard to believe that we're wrapping up the first month of the new year already.
You know, this month, we always say this, but this month has went extraordinarily fast.
It has, and I don't know, you know, my parents and grandparents used to tell me that the older you get, the faster the days, the weeks, and the months, and the years go by, and boy, they weren't kidding, were they? So
No, they weren't. They keep on flying by. Mayor, since the last time we talked, a lot of stuff going on, but let's start locally with City Council. What's going on there as we head into the new year?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's been relatively quiet on City Council. We actually have canceled one committee and a council meeting for this month just because we've taken care of all the business. We should have ordinarily have had council last night, and the last Monday of the month is usually when the mayor delivers its State of the City to City Council. So because we didn't have council, I did not do that. So we're kind of being flexible, and I'm looking at giving a condensed version of the State of the City to City Council on February the 8th, which is our next full council meeting. So, again, it's been quiet on council. We've just been taking care of the people's business and making sure the city's bills are paid. And, you know, at the end of last year, the last Monday of December, we did get the budget passed, and that kind of lays the foundation of what we're able to do and want to do in 2021 and we had to have that budget passed, and it was passed unanimously.
With a year like 2020, which certainly was a year like no other, and that certainly is not an overworked phrase at all, what is the state of Marion as we go into 2021?
Well, I tend to take a look back at the previous year and do a little analysis of how the city fared as we look into this new year. And of course, nationally, statewide, and even locally, we had the same tumultuous problems that the rest of the country did. We had social unrest. We had a dip in our economy. We had the pandemic. But then you break it down and you say, okay, the social unrest, we had protests in Marion, and the protests were peaceful. We didn't always turn on our evening news last year and see peaceful protesting going on in other cities and other communities across this country. And I am grateful and thankful that we have had peaceful protests. And it doesn't really matter which side of the political aisle that you come from, because both sides had protests in our community. And that was a good thing to see, that they were able to do so and do so peacefully. The pandemic was a challenge for everybody and continues to remain a challenge. But I think that we are, I don't want to say we're heading for the finish line, because I don't know how far that finish line is, but I think we all kind of breathe a little bit of sigh of relief now that the vaccine is upon us. I think we're all struggling with the vaccine, and if there's a supply and demand problem, there's a logistics problem, and I know everybody is working very hard to get those sorted out. I was on a call, mayor's call with the governor last week. We did a COVID-19 defense team call yesterday. Obviously, Tracy Kinsler, some elected officials, community leaders. So, you know, we're being well informed about, you know, what the challenges are logistically and supply and demand. And they're not really, they're nobody's fault locally. I'm not even sure that they're anybody's fault statewide, but we just need to make sure that we have all our pistons running at the same time. So when that vaccine does get here, for those that want it, and that's also very important to say, for those that want the vaccine, we need to make sure that it is available and get it out to folks sooner rather than later, because I think that that is going to be the key in our local economy. We saw that dip in April of last year where unemployment jumped up to double digits. But as we slowly began to learn how to live with the pandemic safely, things started to open up, and we are now back down in the mid-single digits. And when I say mid, I mean anywhere between 5.5% to 6% unemployment, which is very, very close to what our normal unemployment rate here is in Marion County. So those were the challenges that we saw last year. And looking to 2021, we just need to make sure that we don't repeat any of the mistakes that might have been made last year by anybody, and make sure that we do all the right things and get the economy open, because there are some businesses in our community that still struggle. You know, our restaurants are not at full capacity yet. And I think when we get vaccinations in arms, we can begin to open up our restaurants to full capacity.
In your opinion, what was the biggest mistake made in 2020 by the government, the local government?
Well, I don't know if there's the biggest mistake that was made. I mean, I hope and think a lot of times those mistakes can be pointed out by people who have a difference of opinion on a decision that was made by our government. And so I don't know that there was really any huge mistakes made locally, but people may just have a different opinion of why I did something or why the county commissioners did something or some other local government agency might have made the decision that they made, because it could have been because of the pandemic, and a lot of our decisions were based around the pandemic. You know, it was unfortunate the fair was canceled, the popcorn festival, a lot of the big social activities that this community has relied upon for decades were unable to happen because of the pandemic. I don't know that they were mistakes, but I think that there are some people out there who disagreed with those types of decisions.
For the better part of 9 months last year, we dealt with the pandemic and COVID-19. Of course, we're still dealing with it, but as the year, new year came in, 2021, we do see this vaccine. It was offered first to people in healthcare and first responders, now being offered to people in age categories and also people in the education field. Have you been surprised at the number of people who are opting not to take the vaccine?
Well, I was initially when the vaccines first rolled out and we had the ability to start administering them. But I think what I'm seeing now is people are becoming more and more comfortable with it as more and more people actually get the vaccination. So I think we're going to start to see those numbers come down. I don't have any illusions that 100% of our population here in Marion, the state of Ohio, or the country is going to get vaccinated. But I think we're going to be well above 50. And I hope by the springtime we're approaching somewhere in the neighborhood of 70 to 75% of the population will want to get the vaccination. And believe it or not, again, I believe that's what's going to return us to a more normal state of the union, so to speak.
It's interesting because it does come down to a personal decision for everybody on whether they want to take this vaccination or not, and right now it's based on age and job. For yourself, what is your personal feeling on the vaccine?
Well, I've never had any doubt in my mind that when it came my turn, so to speak, that I am going to get it. Of course, I've talked to my wife and my kids and my immediate family about it, but I've also had discussions with the fire chief and the police chief and my senior staff, the directors of public safety, public works, and the service director. So we have had these conversations with one another. And, you know, we are again, we're starting to see the comfort level begin to build with our own employees that are now signing up, because we wanted to know in a given department who would get it if it's offered to you, because it's not offered to everybody yet. It's not even offered to all essential workers. Believe it or not, you know, the sanitation department is essential. Somebody's got to pick up that trash. So we want to know how many of our sanitation workers would get it if it was offered to them. We have transit drivers, where a segment, a segment of our community relies so much upon the Marion Public Transportation System. And then we even have a small transit system within our senior center. And those drivers are taking other senior citizens to and from doctors and are ultimately taking them to the vaccination sites. So we think that they're essential as well. So I just think that number will continue to grow as the country, the state, and our community becomes a little bit more comfortable with vaccinations. I think right now it's almost an age, a generational thing. Those that are, I'm gonna ballpark it, 70 and above, don't seem to have that much apprehension compared to somebody who's, you know, 18 to 25, who's a little bit more apprehensive about it. You know, I am of the generation that, you know, I got my polio vaccination when I was born. I don't even remember getting it, but I do remember getting certain vaccinations when we were very young before you went to school. And then, of course, our grandparents all got in line to get the polio vaccine at a point in time. So I think that it just depends what generation you are, and you have to make sure that it is something that you're comfortable with.
Mayor, we've talked about this before, about social media and how it's changed local government, how it's changed news, how it changes how people communicate. And a couple weeks ago, Kai Mead, First Ward Councilman, was in here, and we were talking about how some people involved in the local city government are more vocal and have a bigger social media presence than others and share their complaints a little more vocally than others, and it creates a bit of a contentious environment in city government. Do you see that, and how do we deal with that?
Well, I don't know. That's an interesting perspective from First Ward Councilman Kai Mead's perspective. And, of course, he comes from a completely generation than what you and I do. You know, he's a digital native. You and I had to learn this technology as we became adults. So I think it's a perspective on things. But clearly, yes, you and I have discussed many times about how social media can be negative because there's no fact-checking. You can put your opinion on there, and there are people out there that will think that what you have posted is factual, and there's nothing to back it up. It's an opinion. An opinion doesn't necessarily mean it's news. It's not fact. So there are council members who rely on social media, just as there are state and federal elected officials who do the same thing. I think it's oftentimes done more for political opportunistic gains than it is really a fair way to represent the demographic that you represent.
There have been a couple things that have been looming over Marion for some time now, and I think we're going to see these come to fruition in the next few months according to dates and things of that nature. One of those, and we've talked about it a lot, is the trial of Judge Warner and his wife, and of course he still has not resigned from his position, and possibly the auditor, Landon, and things he might face. How do you think this is all going to play out this year? Not guilty or innocent or any of that, but just how is that going to reflect on the city of Marion?
Well, that's interesting. It's in the judicial system right now, and there are a lot of folks that are questioning the institutions that we have had a lot of faith in over the years, whether it's churches, schools, government institutions. There are so many institutions out there that sometimes we have just begun to take them for granted. Your medium is an institution, radio. So I think that when we start to question all these institutions, that may be a bigger problem, or maybe what is happening with the cases that you just mentioned with elected officials is a symptom of a bigger problem in questioning our institutions. Of course, during the Watergate era, it was okay to question the institution of the federal government, but then we still had faith and confidence in our federal government as an institution that it was going to perform the duties that it was designed to do for the citizens of this country. Now we have people that are questioning it, and we saw that on January the 6th. And I think that we have taken it a lot further than we might have ever have taken it before in our lifetimes or in our generations. But if you don't like the way your government works, then you need to vote those people out. That's how the institution is supposed to work, and it is how it should work. And if there are enough voters that do not think that the two gentlemen that you mentioned have committed a crime that necessitates them being voted out of office the next time that they're up for re-election, then they will retain their positions unless they are found guilty of a felony, which in that case, they would have to resign their positions.
Aren't you surprised, and not just with these two gentlemen, but on a state level and even to some degree on a national level, when somebody was accused of something and they were going to be put on trial, that 90% of the time, politicians resigned their positions. Now that doesn't seem to be the case. They stick with it to the end, till the verdict.
I think maybe that just shows the wealth and the power that an elected official has or might have amassed through their elected position. And again, that's not how our institutions were supposed to work either. Maybe the judge isn't resigning because he relies too much upon and I don't know how much he makes. I know it's over $100,000 a year, but how does he defend himself without his, weekly paycheck or however he gets paid? I don't know. And that's a concern. Is are you in it more for the paycheck? Are you in it more for the power that the position gives you? or are you in it to serve your community, your state, and your country as a whole, and not just serve your self-interests?
And the final question on this issue, last year you said you felt that Judge Warner should resign. Former Sheriff Bailey said he felt he should resign. When the charges finally came down, current Sheriff Matt Bales said he should resign. To my knowledge, none of the county commissioners have said anything. Are you surprised about that?
Well, I would like to tell you I'm surprised, but unfortunately I cannot tell you that. And I'm not sure why none of the three of them have not come out publicly and asked for his resignation, as I did and as the other two that you mentioned. So as of right now, today, there are only two elected officials in this county, Sheriff Bales and myself, that have asked for his resignation. And I think that says a lot about the institutions that we work in.
I want to talk about national news, because how can't we after what happened in the last month? The Capitol riots on, let's call it the Capitol breach that happened on January the 6th. What did you make of that?
Well, I think like most Americans, I was absolutely shocked and stunned that we have brought ourselves to this point in our country where that we have a segment of our population that it thinks it's okay to do something like that. You know, in our Constitution and in the Bill of Rights, there are means and methods to protest your government, to petition your government, and even the electoral process that we've already talked about. You elect those folks out of office if you don't like them. And I just think it's just unbelievable that we had to sit there and watch that. That is something that we have grown up watching other countries do, not our country do that to ourselves. But again, I think we need to take a deep dive and ask ourselves, well, how did we get to this point? What was it? What was the trigger that brought us to this point? And I think we're still trying to answer that question as we analyze what happened on January 6th, but not just January 6th, but what has happened over the past 4 years, 8 years, 12 years, go back 24 years. What has happened in this country that has brought people to the point where they think that that's an acceptable way to protest your government?
When we look at the makeup of the national government now, as opposed to when we last spoke, we now have a newly elected Democratic president. The Democrats maintain the Congress, and after some very tricky elections in Georgia, which a lot of people did not predict, the Democrats, by a very slim margin, just the vote of the vice president, now have control of the Senate. Were you surprised by that?
Well, I think it's getting harder and harder to forecast some of these elections. And when you boil down in them, you know, Georgia is not Ohio and Ohio is not Georgia. So each state is different and unique on how they run their elections. Each state is different and unique in the issues that surround the issues that are brought up in those elections. But I think that the climate that this country has gone through the past 4 years kind of created a playing field that allowed those two particular candidates to win their senatorial elections in Georgia.
I want to talk about this, and I don't know that we've ever talked about anything like this, but of course one of our congressmen in this area, Jim Jordan, has become very popular on the national scene, and before President Trump left, he awarded him the Congressional Medal of Freedom. What did you make of that?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what the criteria is to do something like that. And again, I think that we need to take a deep dive into our institutions in what is the criteria, if any at all, for awarding one of the highest civilian honors, or probably the highest civilian honor in our country. If there's no criteria, if there are no guardrails or rules or regulations or even a playbook for such thing, then I really can't say much about it. That was the president's choice, and the congressman accepted it willingly. But I think we need to take a look at what it is that we do to hand out those types of honors to our citizens. You know, when I first got elected to office, I had a friend who worked at a factory where they made keys, and so he sent me four keys, and these are symbolic, as you probably know, keys to the city. And somebody has to do something that is extraordinary to receive the key to the city. I still have three of those keys because you have to set a very high standard for awarding the key to the city, even though it is symbolic, but much like the Medal of Freedom that the president gave the congressman. It's a pretty high bar, and it should be a high bar, and that just encourages other citizens to do good and to do well for the country or your city in the case of a key, and it shouldn't just be freely and willingly handed out.
Congressman Jordan is the congressman for a lot of people listening to this program right now. He has had quite an ascent over the last few years, featured on national programs. Certainly, most people in the country probably are aware of who he is now. What do you make of him and the job he's done?
Well, I can tell you this, that this is my 14th year in office. And the congressman has never reached out to me in 14 years. And only one time was I able to get a face-to-face meeting with him since I've been in office to discuss issues that were pertinent and relevant to the city of Marion and our citizens. And the only reason I got that meeting is because he was in town for a fundraiser for himself, and the hosts of the fundraiser were also supporters of mine, and they helped me to facilitate a 15-minute meeting with the congressman. And I think that's unfortunate, but that's what gerrymandering gets you. He doesn't have to sit down with a Democratic mayor or a Democratic elected official in his district because it is so gerrymandered that it doesn't matter. He doesn't need to sit down with a Democrat or somebody who has a different opinion than what he has. And I understand that people have different opinions than what I do when it comes to public policy. But that's the key right there, is you have to understand. You have to seek to understand for those to understand you. And we just have a failure of some of our elected officials that don't even have to understand where somebody else is coming from.
In our remaining 4 minutes here, Mayor, and I always appreciate the time, I want to come back locally here. There is a story, I believe, that will appear in today or tomorrow's Marion Star. I'm not sure which. It's on the electronic edition online, and we won't name it, but it is named in the newspaper. There is a local bar, I guess you would say, that was cited for COVID violations. I don't believe too many of these have been handed out, according to Tracy Kinsler over at the health department. This far into the pandemic, are you surprised that something like that can still happen in a local establishment in Marion, Ohio? Not that it's not happening other places, but that it still happens.
Well, you know, I would like to be able to tell you and your listeners that I am surprised, but unfortunately I am not. Our local and law enforcement doesn't have much discretion when it comes to the laws. We don't get to pick and choose whether we arrest somebody for a felony crime or even a misdemeanor crime. When you get into the misdemeanors, yeah, there's a little bit more discretion that an officer can have, and we rely on our trained police officers in the city of Marion to make the right decisions when it comes to that discretion. But I think as we've been living in this pandemic, we've already talked about, To do something like that, I don't know how you just. I think the right choice was made. It was the Department of Liquor Control. It's the Public Health Department. It wasn't the police department that was, surveilling these businesses, hoping that they're staying open past 10 o'clock so we can catch somebody. But we have a lot of good businesses that do follow the rules. So, you know, when one doesn't, it actually hurts the other businesses that are following the rules. That's why the governor put these rules into place. And this rule came from the governor. It didn't come from the mayor. It came from the governor of the state of Ohio as a result of the pandemic that we've all been living under for almost a year now. And so it's unfortunate that we have to. I think that's the importance of getting the vaccination so we can open up and get back to the normal hours and having full capacity in our bars and in our restaurants and other facilities that we have.
With 60 seconds left to go, Mayor, this is the first time we have spoken since the end of the presidency of Donald Trump. Of course, we will see how it goes with President Biden. We're only a few days into that, a handful of days. But now that the presidency of Donald Trump has been completed, in just one or a few words, how would you describe that four-year period?
It was tumultuous. I mean, it wore me out watching the news every night. So I know most Americans maybe don't feel that way. I get it. But it's just nice to have some stability in an institution that is so important to the health, the welfare, and the safety of this country.
Mayor Scott Schertzer, Mayor, thank you for the time, and we will talk again unless something big happens in about 30 days.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Mayor of the City of Marion, Scott Schertzer there, filling you in on everything you need to know about what's going on here in the City of Marion. A lot of interesting information there. Now, we do have a guest coming up here momentarily. That's going to be a lot of fun, I believe, any moment now. Now, we're going to remember Larry King, because this person did work with Larry King, and then we're going to have this person on for another reason, too, that's kind of important to where we are in society at this particular point. Now remember, we are always streaming online at wwgh1071.com. You can download the free TuneIn app and search WWGH anywhere in the world. And as we continue on, as I said, we have a big guest to wrap up the final 15 minutes today. We've had Eleanor Clift, we've had the mayor on, and we are going to remember Larry King a little bit before this 15 minutes is up. But before we do that, our President Donald J. Trump left office last Wednesday, and he's been on this program many, many times, and we are so glad to welcome him here today. First time since he has not been president. Former President Donald J. Trump. President Trump, how are you?
I'm absolutely fantastic. Can you hear me, Scott?
I can hear you.
Okay, because, you know, I'm here at Mar-a-Lago at the new office of the former president, and we're just getting everything set up. We're getting the emblems made, the logos made. We're redoing my office here to look like the Oval Office at the White House. And there's a lot of technical thing. And no one knows technology the way I know technology, just that I wanted to make sure you could hear me.
Well, President Trump, there seems to be a lot being made right now about your Twitter. You no longer have access to Twitter. What's that like?
Well, I have to tell you, I don't need it. I don't want it. I never liked Twitter. But I did have 88 million followers. I had more followers than any other person who's ever lived, other than probably, you know, Jesus. His Twitter following was really big. It was very, very big.
So second to Jesus.
Second to Jesus. Well, you know, I've always said my favorite book is the Bible, other than Art of the Deal, but I'm not in the Bible, so I'm going to keep promoting Art of the Deal, because I can make money on Art of the Deal. I can't make any money on the Bible. And no one holds the Bible upside down the way I hold the Bible upside down. I just want to point that out.
President Trump, you haven't been out of office quite a week yet, but what's it like? What's it like to be a regular citizen again?
Exactly the same. I golf the same amount. I do pretty much the same stuff. I get up around 9, get into the office around 11. Not much has changed, other than the fact I don't have to see the scowling face of Mike Pence, you know?
You know, you and former Vice President Pence had a little bit of a falling out there in the beginning of January.
Yeah, all I asked him to do was kind of skip one line of the Constitution, and he got all upset. Oh, sorry, I can't do that. I can't do that. This guy, what a Boy Scout, what a fame. You know what I mean? I looked the other way for him many times, many, many times, so many times. I can't even tell you. Believe me. He's not the Boy Scout he says he is.
You know, a lot of people in the last days of your presidency, President Trump, kind of left you. Mike Pence would have been one. Mitch McConnell would have been another. A lot of people. Chris Christie.
Listen. A lot of people left me, but I got the good people. I got the MyPillow guy. A lot of people want the MyPillow guy, but I got the MyPillow guy, who, by the way, is a constitutional expert. He even talked about having me do martial law, which would have been a lot of fun, because he would have been right by my side, of course. And, of course, we still have Rudy. But unfortunately, he's being sued by Dominion Sugar. You know, I don't know why. I guess he said something that sugar's bad or something, gives you cavities.
President Trump, what is your biggest regret in office?
No regrets. I did an absolutely fantastic job. In fact, I did everything I wanted to do in 8 years in 4 years, which is really incredible when you think about it, because this is why we did more than any other administration in the history of administrations. I did so many amazing things, so many incredible things. You know, a lot of people give me a hard time about tripling the deficit, but, you know, listen, you got to break a few eggs to make a couple of omelets. Not that I like omelets, or eggs, for that matter.
Were you surprised you were not reelected?
Well, I have to tell you, I was reelected, and we're still working on this. We still have evidence pouring in. What was it, November 3rd was the election? Evidence is still pouring in so much evidence, and I think I told you the last time we talked, we have eyewitnesses who saw an entire graveyard in Atlanta. The coffins opened up, and the dead people kind of, you know, like in a zombie style, marched across the street, voted. They voted without ID, Scott, without ID. Then they went back to their coffins, changed their clothes, and voted again. So this is what I'm talking about. 20,000, 40,000, 50,000 dead people voting. And we have eyewitnesses. We have affidavits. Wait, can you hear that? You hear that? That's paper. That's affidavits. I have a lot of these on my desk.
Well, I should mention, President Trump was with us before the election. He was with us on both of his election nights many times during his presidency and still coming on with us now. And I can't thank you enough, President Trump. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Absolutely. I just want to mention my very good friend, Larry King, passed away. And it was very sad, but, you know, he led a very full life, very full life. He had 17 wives. He was like one of those guys who had harems, almost.
And we're going to change gears here for a moment, because as many people know, joining us as President Trump this morning and always as President Trump has been John DeDomenico. And, of course, you know him from Howard Stern and The View and so many other programs he's done President Trump on, one of which was with Larry King in the last year. And before we remember Larry King with John, Larry King was on this show a couple times. He was on July 3rd, 2012, and in this little clip, Larry King on this program talking about leaving CNN after 27 years, and then we'll come back and get John's memories of Larry King.
The last time we talked was in December. This is a little diversion from Andy Griffith, but we talked in December, and I asked you about leaving CNN, and you said that you were hurt at that time that they didn't offer you a 3-year contract when they offered you the one, which is what brought the end of Larry King Live. In February, they dropped the specials. What's your feeling on that?
Well, I think I think, as I've been told by some people there, that they just felt that, you know, when I came, the last special was Dinner with the Kings, and it did so well. It was a tremendous ratings thing. And so people are calling in, where is he, or why don't you bring him back? And I think it was kind of embarrassing for them. And I was kind of a guy who came into your home every night, and they knew I was going to go on to other things, and now I'm starting in July. This one now, starting in a couple weeks, Aura TV, we're going to be on the Internet. We're going to be distributed by Hulu. Someone told me we'll be seen by more people in a month than saw me in a year.
Perfect.
That's hard to believe, and I've been setting up tapes, and we're set to launch July 16th.
You were hurt when they gave you the 1 year. How did this make you feel when you got the news? 27 years with that company.
Well, you know, it's never easy. You know, I mean, I could have taken an extra one. I had 1 year coming, so I did that 1 year, and they were fine with me. You know, Colin Powell said it best to me. When the train gets to the last stop, you get off, and nothing is forever. I'd never owned the camera. I was an employee of Time Warner. They were very good to me. I was very good for them. It wasn't a divorce per se. It was a long, happy marriage that things come to an end. You know, you're born and you die, and nothing is forever. I miss it, especially on days when there are big stories. But I've been doing speaking. I've been all over the world. I just came back from Azerbaijan. I've been in Lisbon. I've been in Seoul. I've been speaking at conferences. I've been in Moscow. I've been in Kazakhstan. I watch my kids play ball. I got one son in baseball camp in Florida, another in football camp in Utah. I lead a full life.
Well, Larry, it's always a pleasure to talk with you, and you may not have owned the camera on CNN, but a lot of people felt like you did for 25 years.
Thank you so much, Scott. Really great talking to you.
Always great. Larry King, the legend.
Thank you, babe.
The legendary Larry King on this program, July the 3rd, 2012. John, you worked with Larry in the last year. What was it like?
I certainly did Larry King live. I also impersonated him many, many times around the world. So, he was one of my characters. I was so happy when I was told we were shooting with him, because I was doing a scene as Trump. He was Larry King, and we were at the studio in L.A. On Sunset and Gower. We were shooting the show, and when they brought him in, it was just like, there's this icon who's met everybody, has interviewed everyone, who has seen everything, who's been in broadcasting since the beginning of time, and he was a little cranky, but I expected that. But he was really funny, and what I really thought was interesting was he has great comedic timing, and you can go online and, you know, go to YouTube and put in "Let's Be Real, Larry King." You can do this, the two scenes that he and I did together, and he's really funny. It's not, I thought he was going to be like a clunky, you know, broadcaster trying to do a scene in a show, but his comedic timing was dead on.
You know, John, it's interesting because you, in your tribute, which I saw online after working with him, referred to him about how much you admired him and how great a guy he was and what he did, but you used that term cranky. In what ways was he cranky?
He was cranky. Come on, let's wrap this up. Let's go. What are we doing? Why is this taking so long? Come on. I got to get out of here.
So he just a little impatient.
Yeah, he was a little impatient. I also honestly think he was in pain. As soon as the camera stopped rolling, he was like, oh, God. I didn't know if he was kidding or that was part of his shtick or, you know what I mean? So, but he was great. He was very kind to me. And we did have, you know, when you shoot anything, movie or TV, there's downtime. So I did get to talk to him. And I told him, you know, he loved my Trump, which really gratified me because he knows Trump's been on the show. I can't even remember how many times. But one time, Trump did say to Larry during an interview, "You know, Larry, you have horrible breath. You have horrible breath. Did you know this?" I don't know if you ever look it up online. It's absolutely hilarious. But then I told Larry, I said, "But also, you know, I do full makeup, Larry King." He goes, "You do?" I go, "Absolutely, Larry King live. Come and be alive. You know, golly, it's unique." And I did a bunch of the lines, and he just thought that was great. He just thought I don't think he's met too many people other than, you know, people from SNL that have impersonated him.
You know, John, he had a stroke in 2019. This was well documented. He really could not walk anymore, had some trouble with his leg. He was not feeling the greatest. Did you get any sense at that point that he, you know, was definitely slowing down?
You know, it's funny. I think he seemed fine. I know people who unfortunately had strokes, but he was fine other than the fact he seemed to just be in pain. He came in a wheelchair, but at certain points he got up. He had enough energy to walk here and there, but had to get in. He kind of got exhausted very quickly. But man, did that guy have an amazing life, you know? At his age, I didn't know about the stroke, but I just thought it was just old age how he was acting.
And it is interesting, the times we live in, and we don't know what the cause of death is, but we certainly do know that he had tested positive for COVID in the last 2 months and was in the hospital being treated for that. Did that bring home in any way the gravity, not that it already hadn't, of this pandemic we're in?
Well, I've had so many people here, and I know a lot of people all over the country because I've worked all over the country and all over the world, and I know a lot of people who've had COVID, and not the 4 or 5 day version. I know multiple people who've been hospitalized. One of the things, everybody on the set when we were shooting had shields on, and we kept our distance from Larry. The closest, that photo of me and him together is the closest I got to him, and that was for a split second. And what was interesting was somebody said, hey, he's not wearing his mask right. It's below his nose. So, I think with someone of his age, it's your incidence of catching it are much higher.
With exactly 60 seconds to go, John, worked with him, imitating him, and also watching him, obviously. What's Larry King's legacy?
Larry King's legacy is the everyman who could ask any question, because he said it himself, he's just a curious guy. He wasn't a journalist. He was just curious. And that curiosity came to us, the viewer, because he put us in his place, which was beautiful. It was perfect. Perfect way to interview somebody. Mm.
John DiDomenico, excuse me. Yes, has been on the program many, many times, and we laugh and certainly in this case remember a legend. John, thank you so much for coming on, and I'm sure we'll talk in the future.
All right, Scott. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye. John DiDomenico, no other better way to do that to remember Larry King. All right, we thank everybody for coming on this morning. Voice of the People with Linda Sims at 11:10 today and 11:10 a.m. and 4:10 p.m. and Adam the Computer Guy at 2:10 p.m. this afternoon. For this day, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
So being in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
One of the big traditions for a lot of people on Thanksgiving is the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Yes, absolutely, and I was in it 1 year. I played Mother Goose.
Did you?
Yes.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, there was nothing to tell. I was dressed up like Mother Goose, and I was in this thing. And I must say, I had a secret little flask, because it was colder than a bear's ears. And I had a little nip of some good meat. So I was...